BreakTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, January 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports with a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here on this hump day broadcast. We'll be joined by Chris Stone, who, as I mentioned on last week's show, has buy lines all over the place, but the step back, fan sided, rush the court, all kinds of places for him. We'll get some college basketball insight on tonight's games, tomorrow night's games. We'll also take a look at the SEC and then talk a little bit about the conversation that we had with Philip Ross and Reich yesterday about NBA statistics. Well, we'll chat about college basketball statistics here on today's show. Second half of the broadcast, Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday wagering segment with him. We'll look at the NFL playoff games, the two conference championship games coming up this weekend, and then also the, also the Career Builder Challenge. That's this week's PGA Tour event. So without further ado, we'll bring in today's first guest. That is Mr. Chris Stone. Chris, how's it going today, man?
It's good. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time, as always. I know it was a little bit short notice today, so I definitely appreciate that. I think the place to start, and this is a game that you were sort of live tweeting along with last night, Kentucky and Mississippi State. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit already here on the show. It's pretty much Kentucky and everybody else in the SEC. But overall, I mean, what were your impressions of the Wildcats in that game?
I think Kentucky is still a little bit young in the sense that they haven't really done the same thing to teams on the road that they have done to teams at home. If you look at their margins of victory at home, they're, you know, 25 points plus. But when you look at the SEC games they've played on the road, other than the Ole Miss, they're single-digit wins. And you could tell kind of late in the game there, they let Mississippi State get back in the game a little bit, more than probably they would have if they were playing at home. Malik Monk had a really off night. He was 5-for-14 from the field, even though he scored 14 points, kind of one of his less efficient games from an offensive perspective. On the plus side for Kentucky, Winion Gabriel had a great game. He's not really someone who's been much of an offensive factor for the Wildcats this season, but last night he goes 3-for-3 from three-point range, scores 13 points, grabs 8 rebounds. Like, that's definitely a plus for Kentucky. And if he plays like that, they're a much better team because the thing that they're missing is any sort of outside shooting. And if Gabriel can give them some semblance of that, then that's a really big plus offensively. But, you know, my overall kind of, like, broad-level perception of Kentucky is that I'm not sure that they're really ready to get into these hostile environments and blow teams out, but they seem certainly good enough, especially with the way that De'Aaron Fox has been playing, to kind of hold off those mid-level SEC teams.
Well, as we look at it out there in the betting market right now, I'm pulling these futures numbers from Five Dimes, where Kentucky is plus 500. You have to go all the way down to Florida at 100-1 to find the next SEC team. So clearly there's a conference that's down quite a bit. There's not a whole lot of respect for it nationally, whether it's from the talking heads, whether it's from the odds makers. Everyone seems to be on the same page here with Kentucky. They beat North Carolina. They lost to UCLA, lost to Louisville. I mean, this is a team that realistically should probably run the table here in conference play. Maybe they slip up in Gainesville when they take on Florida on February 4th. But, you know, is there anybody that can challenge this team?
In the SEC, no. you know, I think that you're right that they may slip up and lose that game to Florida. But because of the way that the SEC schedule works, they only play the next best team in the SEC, South Carolina. They only play them once, and they play them at home. That game is this Saturday. Kentucky is, according to KenPom, a 13-point favorite with an 88% chance of winning that basketball game, which is just, like, absolutely absurd, given that that's, you know, supposed to be the third best team in the SEC. Now, if that game were played on the road, it'd be a little bit closer, but it's really hard to imagine anybody in the SEC even being close to Kentucky, even though, you know, Florida's not bad. They're a pretty good team. That 100-1 bet on the national title doesn't sound so bad, given that they're the 12th ranked team in KenPom, but I don't think anybody in the SEC is anywhere close to Kentucky.
Well, and of course, we'll find out a lot about Florida tonight. They take on South Carolina. We'll throw a bone to our live listeners and also those that catch the show shortly after it gets published. This is a 6:30 Eastern tip-off, so a little bit different of a start time here in Columbia. This number, open pick'em at the Chris Books, Bookmaker, and DSI. Looks like South Carolina is the preferred side from the sharp players that are getting involved in this game so far. Do you feel like that line is trending in the right direction?
Yeah, I think South Carolina should probably be a slight favorite in this game. The kind of interesting piece about South Carolina, I guess, is that they are undefeated when their leading scorer, Sindarius Thornwell, plays. He was suspended for a decent number of games earlier this season for, I think, violating team rules or an academic issue, one of those two things, and missed five games. And during that stretch, they lost the three games that they've lost this season, Seton Hall, Clemson, and Memphis. And since he's come back, they're 4-0 in SEC play with wins over Georgia, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Mississippi. And it looks like he has scored in double figures in every single one of those games. So I think that playing at home with Sindarius Thornwell back, that would be enough to give me a decent bit of faith in South Carolina. Even though, you know, KenPom likes Florida in the game just based on, you know, kind of how good Florida's offense and defense is. But South Carolina plays great defense. They have their leading scorer back. Combine that with P.J. Dozier, and I think that they're probably a slight favorite in the home game.
Well, let's look at the rest of the SEC here. We've already talked about the top three teams, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina. Pretty significant drop-off to everybody else, I would say. Is there a team that you feel like could get kind of hot here during the conference play and you know, maybe wind up with 10 or 11 conference wins?
The team that's maybe interesting to me that I like coming into the season that is currently 1-5 in the conference right now is Texas A&M. Texas A&M is really talented. They have a lot of really good front court players. Tyler Davis is a 6'10 kind of big man who's in the mold of the old school big man's big body, likes to play in the post. DJ Hogue is an interesting wing player who can shoot the three and kind of create some offense for other people. And then Robert Williams is probably their best NBA prospect, who's just a 6'9", high-energy big man who likes to block basically every shot that he can try to get his hand on. They've opened in the SEC 1-5. They've lost to Tennessee, Kentucky, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. Three of those games have been on the road, so they have quite a few home games left already that they should be able to pick up some wins. KenPom projects them to go 7-11 in the conference, which is obviously not particularly good, and the reason for that is that the point guard that they were recruiting, who's a freshman, was ruled ineligible by the NCAA before the season, so they kind of really are missing that piece in terms of what they have on offense. But they're a team who I think has the talent to put together and string together a decent number of wins, especially given they've got a matchup with LSU left, two matchups against Missouri left, and then, you know, they've already burned through one of their Kentucky matchups and one of their South Carolina, or their only South Carolina matchups. So they're a team I think that could outperform their record down the stretch.
I want to look at one more game tonight, and then we'll look ahead at some of the marquee matchups coming up here on Thursday night. The one I want to look at tonight, not really a marquee game necessarily, but I think it's a very interesting one and one that means a lot here in the Big 12 standings. Kansas State and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, 3-point favorite in Stillwater as they look for their first Big 12 win of the season. This isn't really where Oklahoma State expected to be, I don't think. Can they rally and pick this one up tonight?
I think they can. They have a home game, which is obviously a plus. That team has seen a couple of problems during conference play, I think. I should have an article going up about them later today, actually. So a bit of a preview is that Oklahoma State's defense, which is not particularly good, it ranks 127th nationally in KenPom, is the worst defense so far in the Big 12. The two kind of things that have started to happen during Big 12 play, they have quit creating turnovers, so their yearly turnover rate is above 20%, and in the Big 12, it's down about 16%. And then the other problem they're having is they can't stop teams from scoring inside the arc. They're giving up 54.6% on twos during Big 12 play, which is pretty atrocious. They basically have one big man in Mitchell Solomon, and he commits a lot of fouls. And so when he's on the bench, they don't really have anybody to protect the rim. and against the kind of quality of guards in the Big 12 that's causing some pretty significant problems in terms of their ability to defend other teams in the league. Kansas State, though, to me, is a team that is fine. You know, they defend okay. They have Wesley Awundu, who's a really nice offensive piece, potential NBA prospect down the line towards the end of this year when he graduates. But I think that Oklahoma State can kind of put it together against a team like K-State, especially since they're playing at home. Their back's against the wall. I want to say that they're 0-5 or 0-6 in conference and really need to come away with a win, especially if they're going to, you know, make any noise or try to make the NCAA tournament.
Well, let's look ahead to Thursday night here. A few games I want to touch on quickly. How about Maryland? The Maryland Terrapins, I mean, in terms of talent, this team is certainly at the top, in the top two, top three, maybe even number one in the Big Ten here, with a guy like Melo Trimble that can go out there and win you a ball game. Iowa, big win to get some revenge against Purdue, and then they just get destroyed by Northwestern, lose that game by 35. Can Iowa, you know, come away with a home win here? As they should be a slight underdog. I don't think it's going to be too big of a line, but, you know, pretty significant turnaround for them with that emotional win, a blowout loss on the road, and a look-ahead spot. What do you think about the Hawkeyes tomorrow night?
Yeah, KenPom liked Maryland in that game by a point, so that's certainly going to be pretty close to pick'em line, I would guess, when it comes out. You know, I don't really trust Iowa. Not just this year, but most years, given the way that they've performed and kind of collapsed down the stretch in most of their years. They have a really great player in Peter Jok. He's probably an underrated Big Ten Player of the Year kind of candidate who will, you know, challenge Caleb Swanigan and maybe like Ethan Happ from Wisconsin to try to win that award. But they're just a team that I can't really get behind and trust just because of kind of the history that they've put together. And like you said, you know, you pick up a big win and you would expect that might give you some momentum going forward, and then you show up and Northwestern beats you by 40. So that's a little awkward. With Maryland, I think, you know, you're right that they're super talented, but they haven't seemed to get the pieces quite together that you thought that they would. Melo Trimble's three-point shooting has regressed down to 33%, which is pretty rough. And you would hope that, you know, he can come up big in a road game where they need to get a win, because that's kind of historically what he's done in these situations. But he's on a rough game stretch. He hasn't scored 20-plus points in, it looks like, four or five games. And so that's, you know, I like Maryland in that game just because I don't really trust Iowa, and because I think you're right that Maryland is probably the more talented team. But they're going to need Melo Trimble to step up big time on the road.
Well, let's go the mid-major route here for a minute. We haven't talked about any of those yet. Interesting little game here on ESPNU tomorrow night between Richmond and Dayton. Richmond, perfect 5-0 here in the A-10. Dayton, 4-1, their only loss on the road at UMass. That's UMass's only A-10 win. But, you know, you sort of, when you look at the Atlantic 10, it's kind of a lot like the American Athletic Conference in college football, in the sense that people sort of look at this as being the sixth power conference. So a lot of really, really quality teams here in this league. Of course, you've got Rhode Island, who, again, injury problems for them, but they've got a ton of talent. You know, Davidson's got a great player there in Gibbs. Virginia Commonwealth always hanging around. LaSalle's playing well this year. So this Richmond trip to Dayton, with Richmond 5-0, they played George Washington, but they're down quite a bit from last year. This is going to be the fourth road game already in A-10 play for the Spiders. Is this a bad spot for Chris Mooney's team?
Yeah, I think Richmond's probably in trouble in this one. I like Dayton quite a bit coming into the year. They haven't had the year that I think many people expected them to have, just in terms of finding a quality win that they would probably need to make the NCAA tournament. Their best win, it looks like, East Tennessee State or Alabama, maybe that in-conference win against Rhode Island. But they're still ranked really well, according to KenPom, largely on the back of a really quality defense that turns teams over really well, defends the paint, and kind of prevents teams from getting easy looks. So I think that Richmond is probably going to be in for a rough awakening. They've kind of outperformed the expectations early on here in the A-10. They have played an okay schedule. You know, that road game against Davidson is definitely a tough place to win. But like you said, GW is a team that's down this year. They did beat them on the road, but GW is not the GW that they were last year. And they haven't really played Richmond, that is, hasn't really played any of the top teams in the A-10 yet. They haven't played Dayton. They haven't played VCU. And they haven't played Rhode Island. And so I think that they're probably going to get a little bit of a wake-up call over this next stretch where they play Dayton. Then they get a win against George Mason, but then they also welcome Rhode Island to town. And so I think you may see a pretty quick downturn in the record, despite the fact that they've had a nice start to A-10 play.
One more game to touch on here for Thursday night, and then I want to speak in some more general terms about some stats and some things that you look for when evaluating teams. Arizona's on the road at the Galen Center to take on USC. Arizona rolling right along right now, but they do that LA back-to-back with the Trojans and then the Bruins here on Thursday and Saturday. For USC, they come into conference play with a perfect record. They beat Oregon State, then they get destroyed up in Eugene, lose at home to Cal, lose on the road at Utah in ugly fashion. Nice bounce-back win, though, for Andy Enfield's team over Colorado in Boulder last weekend. So what do you think about this matchup? I mean, you have two pretty different styles here. Arizona, a very controlled type of team. USC, not so much. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe USC. I think USC reminds me of TCU a couple years ago where they kind of gamed the non-conference schedule to get themselves a bunch of wins. And then once they got into conference play, people kind of realized, okay, maybe this team isn't quite as good as we thought they were. Now, that doesn't mean they can't win this game with the way that they play. But I think people have to temper expectations between the record that USC had entering conference play and the record that USC will have at the end of the year just based on that. Now, that being said, Chimezie Metu, their big man, has been playing really fantastic during conference play. It looks like he's averaging 16.3 points and 7.7 rebounds per game during the conference, which is pretty fantastic. But he's going to be going up against an Arizona front court that's kind of been carrying them this year despite having lost a number of pieces. I think that Dustin Ristich is playing his best basketball of his entire career. He's been fantastic during Big 12 play. And then I'm a huge Lauri Markkanen fan. He's a 7-foot power forward who's shooting better than 45% on threes and can shoot them coming off of screens. And there just aren't many 7-footers like that. And I'm not really sure how USC will be able to kind of keep up with them or with Markkanen in particular, kind of playing along the perimeter there. So I like Arizona in that game by a decent margin just because I think USC's record is probably better than how good they really are just in terms of both sides of the ball. Their defense leaves a lot to be desired, and Arizona's offense is quite good.
Looking back at those futures prices for the national champion at Five Dimes, you've got UCLA currently as the second favorite at plus 550. Oregon is plus 2,200, and then Arizona at 3,300. So a 33-1 shot there on the Wildcats. Sort of feels like if you're just using those as a barometer, I mean, the Wildcats are getting disrespected a little bit. I mean, is that an unfair stance for the books to take? Are they, you know, a comparable team to Oregon and UCLA?
Yeah, I think if you were just looking at kind of efficiency numbers, which is what KenPom splits itself on, I think the fact that UCLA has the second best odds versus Arizona down at, what'd you say, 33-1. That's crazy because UCLA is 13th on KenPom. Arizona is 17th. So I think that, you know, I don't know if that means that you take Arizona because the thing that should scare you a little bit about Arizona is that their guards may not be good enough to get them through March to a Final Four. But I think it certainly means you probably ought to stay away from UCLA at that price. And the big reason to avoid UCLA is they don't play any defense. So the second that they play a team that can score with them, now admittedly there are not a ton of those in the country, but there are some. And when they play those teams, they're going to just put themselves in really tough positions. So I do think it's odd that UCLA has such good odds to win the title and Arizona and even Oregon to a lesser extent are so far away.
Well, and then I guess we have to look ahead here a little bit to Saturday's game because Arizona's at UCLA. Very quick turnaround for them. They play at 9 o'clock 6 o'clock Pacific time here on Thursday night against USC, and then play 1 o'clock Pacific time against UCLA on Saturday. So very quick turnaround for this LA doubleheader. And if you're looking at the futures market, if you want to take Arizona and you think that they're going to sweep this weekend set, that would be the time to do it at 33-1, because if they can beat UCLA on Saturday, I think we see a little bit of an adjustment there in their price. So I guess, Chris, that becomes the question. Can Arizona beat UCLA on the road on Saturday?
They can. They probably won't, but they can. Their offense is good enough probably to stay with UCLA. They match up really well. The most interesting matchup in that game, just on a one-on-one perspective, is maybe TJ Leaf versus Lauri Markkanen, the two kind of stretch fours who can both shoot threes, and neither who play particularly good defense. So either of them could have big games in that one. But I think just like being at home, obviously, kind of lends itself to UCLA being favored in that matchup by a decent margin. But I certainly don't think that means Arizona won't keep it close or play a tough game that they could even pull out in the end. But, you know, in college basketball, being at home means so much, especially between two good teams when kind of the fans like to show out and teams play with a little bit more energy and emotion, that I think UCLA should probably be the favorite in that game. They'll probably be, you know, a 6-7 point favorite. If they're much more than that, then it's a little crazy. But I think Arizona will keep that game close. I think it'll just be tough to win because it's a road game against a really good team.
So we had a talk with Philip Rosenreich on yesterday's show about some of the statistics that he looks for in terms of evaluating NBA teams. And it can be a much more daunting task in college basketball. For one thing, you have 351 teams compared to 30 teams. For another thing, you have much, much bigger talent gaps. When you talk about non-conference, some teams may play Louisville, Duke, Kansas, you know, those types. But then they're also going to play small Division II and Division III schools. They're going to play other regional teams, maybe a Big 12 team playing a Missouri Valley team or an SEC or ACC team playing somebody from the Ohio Valley, something like that. So I think it can be kind of difficult to sort through all those different types of numbers. So for our listeners out there that are looking at this from a handicapping standpoint, Chris, what stats would you think that they should rely on?
Yeah, that's certainly true about college basketball versus the NBA. It's really difficult to track 351 teams and to be able to kind of keep up with those statistics. That talent gap you mentioned is important, and it's part of the reason why I think everybody is so reliant on Ken Pomeroy's website, KenPom, which I've referenced quite a bit already. KenPom is, I think, $20 a year for a subscription, which isn't bad for the amount of information that you get. I use it probably every day. KenPom tracks on a team level and on an individual level offensive and defensive efficiencies, and it adjusts those for the strength of the schedule that they've played. So that's super valuable when you're talking about that talent gap and how do you address someone who played Sacred Heart versus somebody who played Michigan State. And what the final scores were in those games. So KenPom does a great job of factoring in the quality of opponent in addition to kind of what the score margin in a game was, whereas something like RPI, for example, that they use a lot for the NCAA tournament, doesn't do a great job of factoring in, you know, how big the margin of victory was and how big or where the game was played. So KenPom adjusts for where and who they play. And what you can kind of look at from a top level on KenPom are the four factors. So the four factors that Dean Oliver says are the most important factors to winning basketball games. You know, you have shooting, turnovers, offensive rebounding, and free throws. KenPom keeps track of those for every team. And then you can kind of dive into some miscellaneous components that kind of make up all of those factors. So KenPom is definitely, I think, tool number one. If you're looking for a free resource, sportsreference.com, sports-reference.com. The same people who run Basketball Reference have a setup for college basketball that has all the kind of advanced statistics you would want about individual players, but it doesn't do as much with teams as KenPom does. And then if you're just looking to get into some of the granular stuff, HoopMath and HoopLens are two other sites that I use pretty regularly. HoopMath tracks scoring or field goal percentages by shot type, so at the rim, other twos, and three-pointers. The difference between hoop math and what you get in the NBA is that the NBA has player tracking, right? So they can estimate, you know, shot distance a lot better than hoop math, which is solely reliant on box score calculations. The last one I'll mention is Hooplens, which is a recent addition that tracks kind of lineup data, so on and off numbers for when players aren't around. Why might that be valuable? Well, yesterday Creighton announced that Mo Watson, their starting point guard, isn't going to play the rest of the year because he tore his ACL. So Hooplens is valuable because you can kind of start to dive in and see, okay, what might Creighton's lineup combinations look like over the next couple of games based on the fact that Mo Watson isn't playing. So I wrote a short piece the other day about how Creighton performs without Mo Watson on the floor against kind of the best teams they've played. And with Watson on the floor, they're significantly better than those teams, but without Watson on the floor, they're actually worse. And so you have to start to think about what's Creighton going to look like without Watson, and that's one of the places you can start to look at some of that stuff.
Well, and I like that you mentioned a couple of other sites, because a lot of people do certainly know KenPom. I mean, it's kind of like, I'm a big baseball guy. It's like FanGraphs, but for college basketball.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of great stuff there that can be used. I know you're a baseball guy as well, so I know you're very familiar with FanGraphs. But the thing is, oddsmakers are exceptionally familiar with KenPom as well. You know, I mean, that KenPom has the projected scores. He's got what he would make the line, all that. Oddsmakers certainly know that and certainly use that as a resource, because they know that the betting public is going to be heavily reliant on KenPom. So I do like that you brought in a couple of those other sites. I think are going to be, you know, really important to our listeners. The other thing I'd ask you about, Chris, is this, you know, in terms of things to just look for, maybe tendencies of teams, tendencies of coaches, you know, do you know where you get any kind of information like that? Is it just something that you kind of pick up from watching and following? Are there, you know, a lot of good content sites out there that you feel like people can get things from?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is going to just be watching games to kind of get a feel for how teams play. It's really difficult, I think, for somebody to categorize that in terms of statistics. If you're just interested in reading about it, there's obviously plenty of good sites. I think the work that gets done at Rush the Court is fantastic. It's a little deeper analytical stuff in most instances than some of the other websites that are out there. I think the stuff we've been doing at FanSided tends to be in that direction as well, rather than some of the kind of, like, you know, narrative-based content. I've been impressed with the stuff that's happening at FanRag Sports in terms of college basketball content and analyzing, you know, the impact of stuff. So I think if you want to learn tendencies, you're going to just have to either watch games or read a bunch about the subjects to really get a feel for that. The only other option is to kind of pay attention to pace and stuff like that gives you some idea. But, like, if you're interested in, you know, what's John Calipari going to do at the end of a game with Kentucky, you know, you're just going to have to watch Kentucky a little bit to see what he does in a close game.
A lot of good insights today from Chris Stone. As I mentioned, Chris, you've got bylines all over the place. You mentioned that you got a piece coming out here on Oklahoma State. It should post today, and obviously that's got some relevance with their big game tonight. Anything else in the pipeline or anything else you've written recently that you want to direct our listeners to?
Every week on FanSided, I write a 5 takeaways column on Mondays that I think is usually a good read, just in terms of diving into some of the trends that are happening with various teams across college basketball. So, you know, I direct people there. But if people just want to follow on Twitter at CStoneHoops, that's probably the best way to see what I'm writing and, you know, I'll obnoxiously tweet some games for you.
Well, that, and you're also doing NBA mock draft picks 1 through 30 that you posted about 6 days ago. So that should be coming up tomorrow then as well. So it said at CStoneHoops on Twitter. Chris, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
Of course. Have a good one.
Great stuff there from Chris Stone. As I mentioned, FanSided, Rush the Court, covers the NBA draft over there at The Step Back, at CStone Hoops on Twitter. So some good stuff there with him. And, you know, that's really an important thing is making sure that you have as many resources as possible, because, you know, KenPom is great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's certainly something that I use for the purposes of this show, for the purposes of writing up previews and all that type of thing. The odds makers are using it too. So there aren't a whole lot of edges to be gained there in that respect. And that's one of the reasons why I started digging so deep into sabermetrics. I mean, For one thing, I wanted to see how the Cleveland Indians front office operated. I wanted to make sure that I was, you know, inundated with the things that they were using to evaluate players, evaluate their system, all that type of thing. So on a personal level, it was something that was very important to me. On a professional level, I feel like my knowledge and understanding of sabermetrics can give me an edge over the sports books, because while they may utilize some of it, they're not utilizing most of it. And so I feel like that's something that can give, you know, the listeners and the readers a little bit of an advantage. So it helps me in that regard. Understanding and knowing KenPom is a really, really good skill to have, but the odds makers also use it. So you do have to go above and beyond, go to that next level, you know, and get the additional content, the additional statistics, whatever the case may be, all that different stuff, different type of stuff that you need, you know, in order to have success as a college basketball handicapper. We've got one more guest left to go for today's show. It is Wes Reynolds. We'll bring him in just a second here. After I remind you about the great promo code options available over at DSI Sportsbook. You know the BTB Radio promo that'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up. No strings attached. No deposit necessary. You can let that ride as long as you want. But then when you do make a deposit, if you've used that BTB Radio promo code, you'll get an additional 50 to 100% bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. If you just want to go straight to the 100% deposit bonus, that promo code is BANG200. It'll also get you 100% for the live casino. Used to be BANG300. They don't support their poker client anymore, but still, you got 100% bonus over there for the sportsbook and the live casino using the promo code BANG200. And obviously, I've talked about this. I talk about the importance of this. I guarantee you that our next guest, Wes Reynolds, could talk about the importance of this for days and days and days, about being able to shop around for the best number, the best lines on games, the best futures prices, whatever the case may be. You have to have avenues available. And if DSI isn't one of them on your list yet, certainly we recommend them, suggest them, and have those two bonus code offers for you. So that will bring in today's second and final guest. That is Mr. Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter, for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Maybe, hopefully. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you, man?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time here, sir. I know you got a lot of things going on, so always a pleasure to get a chance to talk with you. And I guess I'll go ahead and let you echo what I just mentioned. And you know this as well as anybody with the volume that you play. I got to have multiple sports books at your disposal.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you have to look at and really kind of evaluating the books. And I think as you put the time in, you can kind of see maybe what some of the sharper books are, maybe what some of the books that cater to the more recreational people are. I mean, like, for instance, if you have something like Bovada or something like that, the former Bodog, that they're going to usually pump the favorites a little bit. Or they're going to like maybe the more what you would call, I guess, and I sometimes hate this term because I think, you know, it's a little too broad, but what you might call like the public underdogs. I mean, if you look at like an example for Sunday, the Green Bay Atlanta game, everywhere is, for the most part, at least offshore, is painted 5, but yet Bovada has Atlanta only 4 minus $1.15. So, you know, that tells you that Green Bay is a little bit, you know, we're not breaking earth-shattering news here, is probably the more public team in the game. I mean, you know, they took money against Dallas, who, you know, it for a long time during the season felt like they could not cover a game. So, I mean, that's just like an example. And you know what some of your sharper books are, maybe, like your, you know, if you have access to Pinnacle or if you have access to Chris/Bookmaker, what it's branded here in the U.S., Olympic, which is now called Greek, a little bit more sharper. And then you see, if you look at some of the Vegas lines and you do a comparison, whether it's a paid screen or a free screen somewhere, you know, usually the lines at somewhere like Westgate or CG Technology are more sharper than the Station, or more sharper than the Golden Nugget. I mean, you know, it depends on the clientele, which in terms of, you know, makes the lines. You know, it depends on the customer base at each book. But, yeah, it is very important to have, you know, a bunch of different places. I mean, you know, maybe, you know, it depends on how much of a player you are, but even if you're just a standard player, you know, have 2, 3, 4 spots at least, I think.
Well, let's talk about this Green Bay-Atlanta game because, as you mentioned, it's very interesting to see the Packers as a very public dog here this week. And again, that, like you said, that's kind of a term that's, you know, very broad. But Bovada showing the 4, BetOnline, another relatively public book, showing 4.5. Rest of the market pretty much showing 5 out there. There are a couple other 4.5s at some of the other slightly more public books. But it's a really interesting situation because you've got an Atlanta team with a really, really tremendous offense, a little bit better defensively, but Atlanta doesn't have that postseason reputation that Green Bay has. And it certainly doesn't hurt that Green Bay has rattled off, what, 8 in a row?
Yeah. And I mean, it is very hard to go against Aaron Rodgers, who is playing, you know, I think some of the best football at the quarterback position that you've seen in at least several years. And, I mean, you know, and it's tough. I look at the total. I mean, I see a total in the 60s in an NFL game, and, you know, your initial instinct is to go under, you know. But, I mean, you just can't – I just feel like I can't do it. I mean, I tried that second half under last week in the Dallas-Green Bay game, and it started fairly slow. I mean, you didn't have a lot of score, and you're like, hey, I think I'm going to get that. And then all of a sudden it explodes in the fourth quarter, and guys are making, you know, 55-yard field goals like they're nothing. And so, I mean, with this, I mean, I would tend to lean to Atlanta. I mean, it might be something where you want to look at maybe the Atlanta money line instead of the points. I mean, and kind of monitor that during the week. I think anything, I mean, right now it's at $2, you know, and if money keeps coming in, if that goes down to maybe like a 175 or something, I think that's at least somewhat cheap.
Well, that's an interesting point to make here, and it's sort of, it's kind of evaluating risk-reward because a lot of people are going to look at a minus $2 price tag and say, you know, I don't really want to do that. I don't feel comfortable with that. They don't understand, and this isn't a knock on anybody. I mean, a lot of this boils down to math, and it can be some pretty advanced math. But, you know, to sit there and look at the value of taking minus 200 instead of the minus 5, just taking the points out of the equation, how do you sort of factor in that risk reward? I mean, is it purely a mathematical play for you, or how do you approach that situation?
I mean, excuse me, I'll lay it on the line. I mean, I'm not some advanced math guy. I'm very much not that. And there are people out there that you can find on Twitter or wherever that are far much better at the math than I am. I mean, I'm a guy, you know, like if you look at basketball, I tend to, if I like a favorite of 3 or less, I tend to try to take the money just to give me take the money line just to give me a little peace of mind. And yeah, sometimes it's going to add to your losses where you're going to have a minus 155 that loses when you could have laid minus 110. So you're going to, you know, lose the 45 cents on the dollar. But I tend to like to do that for peace of mind, you know, just, you know, it's not like it happens every day, but I mean, you know, where you kind of don't want to, you know, lay the minus 2 and then you win by 1. I mean, so I like to take the money and line and take the points out of play, you know, when it's kind of a one possession type of game, especially more so in basketball. But I mean, I think Atlanta definitely here, if you could get it, you know, and wait on it, I mean, you might be able to get it under $2. I think that's just you know, a better play, I think. And I think it's a relatively cheap money line. Now, it didn't work out on Sunday, but I took the Chiefs money line, you know, and I thought, well, $1.20, $1.25 is pretty cheap instead of, you know, laying 2.5 when Pinnacle and Greek, the sharper books, were at minus 2.5. And then on Sunday afternoon, you were seeing some 1s and 1.5s at some other places. So I just said, you know what? I'll spend the extra 10, 15 cents and take the money line. It didn't work. They should have tied the game, but they got the holding penalty. So it was a loser. So don't just, you know, because you get a bad outcome, don't think that that's not sometimes the right way to go. I mean, sometimes you'll go the right way and you're going to lose. I mean, I've said it before on air, sometimes good bets lose and bad bets win. I mean, it's not an exact science here.
One other thing I want to ask you about with regards to this Green Bay-Atlanta game is the total. It's sitting up at 61, which is an historic number for a playoff game. We haven't had one that high since 1986 per ESPN Stats and Info. And when you look at something like this, with something that, you know, is uncharted territory, we haven't seen anything like this, the natural inclination from the quote-unquote sharper guys is probably going to be to look for reasons to take the under first. But yeah, that's a really hard thing to do with these two quarterbacks in a controlled weather environment in the dome, a couple of defenses that aren't particularly great. What are you thinking about in terms of the total here?
Well, I mean, I think this is a game where you almost want to look. I mean, it's a little bit of a risk because if you lose, your loss comes earlier. But you almost, I think, if you're looking at the under, I think the better under bets in this game, if you're looking that way, are either first half or maybe even first quarter. Because if you look at the first quarter, some of the lines right now, I mean, you're seeing, for the most part, I mean, not all of them have them up, and usually that's day of the game. If the books are going to, I mean, have, you know, there's a few that have them up, but not all of them yet. But you're seeing, you know, some like 13.5 juice to the over, minus $1.20, minus $1.15. But there's a couple places like Chris and a couple of the offshore credit shops that are having it 13 juice to the under. And, I mean, there's just a sense of, well, gosh, that's just a touchdown apiece. You know, they can easily do that. Well, of course they could easily do that. Then why aren't they setting that at 14? You know, then why are they setting that under? I mean, it seems like a simplistic way, and it's probably an overly simplistic way to look at it. But, you know, you're seeing these 13.5s out there. I mean, God, that could be 7-7 4 or 5 minutes into the game. But, I mean, there's a reason why numbers are the way they are. So, I mean, you know, sometimes when you're going to hear all week with the punditry on ESPN and all the NFL Network and all the other outlets, you know, how much of a shootout this is going to be. But, of course, they're going to say that in their analysis when the total is posted at 61 points, you know, in a conference championship game, for God's sakes. But, I mean, if I was looking at the under, I'd probably try maybe first quarter, first half, because maybe these teams, because it is the game to get you to the Super Bowl, I mean, this isn't a game, you know, when they played in, I can't remember what week it is for the regular season, when it turned into a real shootout at the end. So, you know, maybe there's a little shakiness early because there is some pressure to get to this game. And, I mean, you don't get many chances at the Super Bowl, so maybe it starts out a little slow and then it goes more to form later in the game.
You know, I think that's a really excellent point and a really smart way of looking at the game. We talked about derivative betting with you a couple months ago, I would say, when we first introduced some of those topics. And, I mean, it's – you say it maybe it is a simplistic way to look at it, but I don't think so. I think that context is really important. You look for context clues in the lines. If you look at a line and say, why is it this way? It's going to be that way for a reason. You know, I like to say on this show, every line tells a story. And like you said, the fact that that one's under 14, certainly some credence to the way that you're looking at it. And of course, keep in mind too, what Atlanta and Seattle had two exceptionally long first possessions in that game last week. So maybe that's something that kind of factors into it a little bit too, is that if you are Atlanta and you do play with control, and it seemed like that was what Kyle Shanahan wanted to do on that first drive, you do take a little bit of those nerves out of it because you're not playing up tempo. You're simply focused on executing that play at that specific time. And that seems like a pretty savvy way to go about easing your team into the game.
And that's a good point you make about Kyle Shanahan. And, one of the things I do like about Kyle Shanahan's offense is he uses the running backs in the passing game. You know, this isn't just and Green Bay does it too, to a lesser degree, but now they've got pretty much a guy that's a receiver that's probably been their best running back over the past several weeks with Montgomery. But you're going to see Shanahan, you know, he'll throw those dump-off passes, those safety passes to Freeman or Coleman, and both of them have got really good speed. Freeman's a little bit more of the power guy that is going to break through a lot of tackles. Tevin Coleman, I think, is more of the speed guy in space. But, you know, you have confidence where you can run those guys and kind of make that short passing game almost an addendum to your traditional running game, you know, throwing these little screens and these little dump-offs to these guys, you know, where they can move the chains. And even if they're not big gains, they're still getting 5-6 yards and moving the chains and keeping the clock going. So, you know, Atlanta, I think, is capable of, you know, one of the things I like about them is they can still score points, but they're capable of having those 6-7 minute drives because I think they have trust in their running backs.
Well, let's go to the AFC Championship game here between Pittsburgh and New England. And again, taking a look around the market, this time you've got Bovada showing 6 on New England, a large majority of the market showing 5.5. So again, shading to your client base, Bovada a little bit higher on New England here. Also 5 dimes, which is kind of interesting because I think 5 dimes has a pretty wide variety of handicappers, ranging from guys that are pretty sharp that like the number of betting options that 5 dimes gives, and also a lot of public players that, you know, just happen to know the brand name. But is this game a little bit tougher of a handicap for you, or do you feel like you've got a stronger feel on this one?
I actually feel like it is a little bit tougher because, I mean, if you're looking at the line right here, I mean, you know, because you have two pretty high-profile teams, so I don't think this is going to be as simple as, hey, the public's going to be on the Patriots. I mean, it may turn out to be, but you'll see plenty of recreational money on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, they're going to draw. You know, you kind of saw that a little bit with the Packers last week. I mean, you know, this wasn't just all Dallas, the traditional, oh, the public is on the favorite. I mean, there were a lot of people on the Packers. And actually, in some places, more so than at Dallas, as you saw kind of with some of the tweets we've been seeing about William Hill having their worst NFL playoff day ever. I mean, that means they took a ton of Green Bay money. So, I mean, I think you'll see Pittsburgh get money here. I don't see this line going to something like 7 or anything like that. Maybe you'll see a couple 6.5. But, you know, you're going to see teaser action with New England if you could tease them down to a pick in Foxborough in January where Tom Brady is like, you know, 800,002 or whatever his record is at home and in Foxborough. But so, I mean, having that number makes me kind of want to lean to Pittsburgh, but the Ben Roethlisberger home road splits, which are out there, I don't have in front of me, but I've seen them. He's been a lot less effective on the road. I mean, you saw last week they couldn't score. They you know, when they had opportunities to get touchdowns, they were settling for threes a lot. I mean, you know, and 6 threes were enough to win the game, but you've seen a little bit of tick to the under here in some places. I think it opened 51.5, and you're seeing some 50.5s and even some 50s out there. Might lean to the first half under here. That kind of, if I was to say, hey, man, bet me a play right now, that might be where I'd look. It's under 25. You're seeing it juice some places. There's some 24.5s as well. But, yeah, I think this is the tougher of the two games. I mean, they're all tough this time of year, and my playoffs, I haven't, you know, exactly been knocking them out of the park in the playoffs after a solid regular season. So I think that this is a very tough game. I mean, you know, keep in mind looking at the lines, you know, just kind of gauge what you think is going to happen in terms of the bets. You know that the books are going to get tons of teaser money with this price less than 7. I mean, you can tease it down to pick if you do just a traditional 6-point teaser. I usually like to do 6.5s with the extra juice because, you know, sometimes if it's 2, you can get it to 8.5, you know. So, you know, I like teasing through that 3 and 7. I think that there's a lot more value in that. You're not going to have that opportunity with either of these two games, but, you know, you will see plenty of New England teasers on Sunday teasing that down to pick.
You know, I was actually kind of thinking about that, and this will be the last point we make for the NFL here, and then we'll flip over to the golf side, is you have teaser possibilities all over the place. If you tease down the favorites, you're getting 3, 4, you're actually teasing them through 0. If you tease up the underdogs, you're getting through 7 and 10. So it's going to be a lot of teaser exposure here this weekend for the books. And I think that's kind of interesting because you have both of these numbers sitting here in that dead zone between 4 and 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because you're not getting the traditional. I mean, if you're teasing up or down, you're teasing up or down through one key number instead of two, you know, like those Stanford Wong teasers when you tease them up through 3 and 7. I mean, you know, and you probably will get some Steeler money. I'm glad you actually brought that up because I wasn't thinking about that right away. I think you'll get more New England money teasing down, but you'll get Pittsburgh money teasing them up to double digits because, I mean, this would be a high-profile team that has won big games that you're getting through double digits too. So, yeah, this is really interesting, the numbers they put out there. I think, you know, it's almost like a cat and mouse kind of, you know, wait and see where these things are going to go. And, you know, there's going to be a ton of action on these games, but how much are they going to move the line? So it's really kind of, you know, waiting and seeing what people are going to do and how much of this money is going to come the day before or on game day on Sunday.
Well, and that'll be something our listeners will have to listen for on Friday's edition of Bang the Book Radio this week when we bring in Brent from DSI Sportsbook, and I'll talk about some of those same things with him and see if we can get a feel for what the action is like out there in the marketplace. Well, we'll flip over to the golf side of things here. The Career Builder Challenge used to be known as the Humana Challenge, also the Bob Hope Classic, out there at PGA West. Again, here, you've got one of these early season events, so you don't have the greatest of fields, but you've got a cut after 54 holes here for this tournament. You've got this event played on three different courses with the stadium course hosting Sunday's final round. That makes it pretty challenging, right? Trying to figure out who's going to be playing on which course on what day and all that type of thing.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, usually the books, you know, the smarter books will usually try to get guys on the same course. Although kind of looking back at some statistics based on last year, I mean, the easiest of the course was the tournament course at PGA West, but it wasn't easy by much. I think the most difficult course was the stadium course. That there was a scoring average of 70-82. PGA West was 68.94, and the La Quinta course was at 69.15. But they all ranked as fairly easy courses. I mean, the winner was Jason Duffner last year that I was fortunate enough to have at 25. Bill Haas the year before was minus 22, but there was the weather wasn't exactly usual Palm Springs weather then. But in recent years, you've seen 25 under, 22 under, 29 under, 25 under, 24 under. And this event, actually, when it was the Bob Hope Classic, used to be a five-day event. So you were seeing scores in the 30-plus under type of range, but you know, these are relatively easy courses. You know, you look at the design things. Pete Dye is the stadium course. Nicholas designed the tournament courses. So, you know, looking back, seeing where these guys have won, what designs they've won on. Some guys are real good on Dye courses, some guys are not. So, you know, those are angles you want to kind of look at.
Well, I know we like to talk about this in terms of trying to compare courses a little bit, you know, look for some of those guys that play well on a certain course that could translate over to this course. Is there a course that's sort of, you know, put together in a similar fashion?
Oh, I mean, the one that I felt probably had the best correlation of the courses on tour, I thought was the TPC Summerlin course, where you have, I forget the sponsor name now. I think it's the Shriners Hospitals Open. They used to be called the Las Vegas Invitational. Summerlin, north part of Las Vegas, you know, a resort type of course, Bermuda, where you're going to see some low scoring. You're going to see a lot of birdies. It's not going to be a course where 12 under is going to win on Sunday. So, that was one I kind of looked at. So I looked at, I think I ended up playing a couple guys that, you know, posted pretty solid numbers there last October. So that's a little bit of a correlation. And then, you know, the obvious design angle with Pete Dye or a Jack Nicklaus course, the Dye course is going to get 2 days. So that's probably more important. And then guys that maybe putt really well on Bermuda grass, that's another angle to look at here. So You know, and then looking at some guys that play well on these, you know, more resort type of courses that aren't your traditional country club courses.
Where can you find stats like that about how guys perform on different green types and all that?
There's a couple different sites that I look at. I mean, there's any number of things. I mean, you know, there's even simply, you know, looking up a player and going up Wikipedia and clicking on the course and seeing who the designer was. But there's a site I use for some stats called golfbettingsystem.co.uk, and there's a couple guys that put picks over there, and sometimes I agree with them and sometimes I don't. But they have, like, not only your form stats in terms of how guys have played the last, you know, 10 to 12 weeks, they have previous tournament form. They have a little predictor model on the site, and then kind of, you know, looking at what their odds are. And then, you know, in some of the write-ups, you might see, hey, this guy has won so many times on Bermuda grass, or this guy has won so many times on courses above 7,500 yards, or, you know, and there's some really good breakdown and looking at this. I mean, in terms of general stats, when you get into the more specific stats like driving accuracy or, you know, scrambling and the real advanced stats, I mean, PGAtour.com updates those every single week, so you can find that type of stuff if you're looking for a specific, you know, actual golf metric, actual stat. But that's something that I like to use in terms of, you know, especially with, like, the course design angles and the type of putting surface or the weather angles. So that's something I like to look at.
Well, when I wrote up my preview over at bangthebook.com, I must have grabbed the five dimes odds really, really early on in the process, because some of these guys have dropped considerably. So it seems like some of the long shots, or at least the medium types of shots, are getting the love from the guys with respected opinions. I mean, when I first looked at this, Patrick Reed was plus 1,200. He's now plus 1,800. Phil Mickelson was plus 1,800. He's now plus 3,000. So it seems like some of those medium shot guys are the ones that are getting some love this week. You've got one on your card. Haven't seen a ton of line movement with him, but a little bit, and that's Zach Johnson.
Yeah, Zach really played well last week at Wailea. And, I mean, I hate to say he was in contention, because nobody was really in contention when you have a guy that wins back-to-back and sets the 54-hole scoring record on the PGA Tour to boot at 253. But, you know, he was in contention for second, I guess, shall we say. But ended up finishing sixth at Wailea, but he was up there at second and third most of the time. His approach shots were really good. He was strokes gained team degree was good, and you know, was top 10 in the field in putting average. I mean, he wasn't the best at any stat, but he kind of was well balanced. And Zach was somebody that I think had a little bit of a rough year off winning the Open Championship in 2015, because Zach made an equipment change and just never really got going. Didn't play poorly, but it was a down year, I think, for him, and he hasn't won a tournament since. But, you know, Zach is a guy that's one of those Bermuda grass guys. He's got four wins in the last several years on this, and has good record here, eighth in 2012, third in 2014, played well on various Pete Dye courses. And if you're looking at some of the Pete Dye courses, TPC Sawgrass, where they have the players, Whistling Straits at the PGA, South Carolina, where they have in Hilton Head, where they have the used to be called the MCI Classic. I forget what it's called. They changed these sponsors so many times. But basically the one down in Hilton Head where you get the jacket. He you know, is a guy that's played pretty well in the desert courses. You know, says he likes the greens here, and, you know, does well on Bermuda. So, you know, I think Zach, I don't think these courses are too long necessarily for Zach. If you're looking at the length of the courses, these are all very much around 7,000 yards, 7,100 yards. So these aren't courses that are necessarily going to favor the bombers.
Well, another guy that's on your list here this week, Jamie Lovemark, another one that's kind of moved down a little bit. I see him at 26-1 right now at five dimes. You caught him at 33-1. What do you like about him here?
Well, I mentioned last week in watching this, I actually, you know, for the each way bettors, if you have access to that, he actually got a place last week with an eagle on the 18th and ended up finishing tied for fourth at 18 under as a 110-1 shot. But Lovemark was a guy that was in contention here last year and then found the water a couple times, you know, on Sunday, which really kind of took him out of the tournament. But, you know, he really is a guy that can tear up some of these really soft courses and was sixth here last year. He was in the final group with the eventual winner, Jason Duffner, and Adam Hadwin, who I also put on this week at 70-1. I mean, he's one of those guys that can get – that can kind of get there, but sometimes doesn't break through. I mean, he should have won in New Orleans last year, but guy that makes a ton of birdies, and he had two eagles and 18 birdies last week at Wailea Country Club out in Hawaii. So, you know, he's a former USC player, so plays well on the West Coast and California, very well last week at the Sony. So, I mean, I wish I was getting a little bit better price on him. I wish he was maybe, you know, 40-something to 1 or something like that. But I think with the field a little bit weaker this week, it's probably as good as you're going to get. But I would expect he'll be a contender here.
One other guy I want to look at here that you talk about in that 40-to-1 price, Kevin Kisner. And this is a guy that's kind of been knocking on the door a few times to pick up some victories. What makes you like him this week?
Kisner, I think, was maybe a little bit more of a form play. He actually was the other one in the tie for fourth position with Lovemark last week. Just couldn't really make anything the last few holes. And I think, you know, and sometimes there's a little bit of a discouragement there when you're like 8-9 shots back and you're playing darn good golf and you can't win. I mean, he actually played stellar on the weekend. I mean, he had to eagle his last hole on Friday in the second round just to make the cut, and then he shoots 60 on Saturday, 10 birdies, no bogeys on the card, and then shot 65 on Sunday, and it really probably could have been better. So I think you're getting a decent price here. I was a little surprised he was in the high 30s or right around 40. Pete Dye, he didn't play here last year, but won on similar greens at Sea Island at the fall event that they have down in Georgia. Good Pete Dye player, too. Was second at Hilton Head, second at the TPC Sawgrass at the Players. You know, I like his form. He's pretty accurate off the tee. His approach shots were really good last week. Obviously, shooting 10 under on a Saturday with no bogeys on the card. I mean, making 10 birdies, that whatever it is, whatever par it is, I mean, that's super impressive. So, you know, I think he's a guy that's pretty close to a win, and he's been pretty consistent. So, you know, had to go with him here. I mean, maybe the rain's going to – maybe you might get a little splinter of rain or specter of rain, rather. And, you know, he can tear up the soft ball courses as well.
A lot of excellent insights today from Wes Reynolds. You can check out the rest of his golf picks for this weekend over on his Twitter timeline, as well as all the other things that he plays at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, thank you so much for joining us, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, buddy. Always a pleasure.
Great stuff there. Good to get some really strong insight there on the NFL in terms of looking at the betting markets, looking for those context clues. I think that's something that's really important and something that our listeners need to add to their handicapping arsenal. And we give you a lot of different weapons here to go after the sports books with, and hopefully that's one that you can take advantage of here going forward. Coming up on our Thursday show, we'll be joined by Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com with this week's Powers Picks segment, and also Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com for our college basketball capping segment. We'll hopefully get his situational and technical plays of the week again here on tomorrow's segment. Then on Friday, Brent from DSI Sportsbook. We'll see what else we have lined up for Friday's show. May just be me talking hockey and baseball and all kinds of other stuff. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know. But we do know what we've got on tap for Thursday. So do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.